Okay, my name is Bill Kingerski. I'm 71 years old, and my life starts back right from the very beginning. I was born in Dunnville, 1946. My parents are both from west of Thunder Bay. My dad was born in Fort Frances, which is on the border of Minnesota. It's a border town. And my mom was born in Rainy River, which is also on the a border town of Minnesota. They met and got married, and my dad moved to Dunnville to get his first teaching job. He's only there for about a year and a half, 2 years, to start out with. I was born down there in 1946, like I said. And when my mom got pregnant with my brother, I only had the one sibling, she had to send me to Rainy River to her sister's place to stay for a year while she gave birth, because she had spent most of her time in bed because she had a very bad pregnancy. So my aunt came and picked me up on the train. It took me all the way back to Rainy River. That's a long trip, believe me. And I spent at least a year there, because I didn't go back until after my brother was born, which was in 1948. So I actually turned 2 in July in Rainy River, and I came back to Dunnville with my aunt. And I think that might have been some of my problem in life, because being disassociated from my parents for that period of time, mm-hmm. and being so close to my aunt, I think may have caused me to lose that bonding with my mother and my dad. So when I came back home, I didn't really accept my mother as my mother, because I thought my aunt was my mother. Like, you know, you get that distortion there. That's how my life started. So in 1949 or 1950, my parents moved back to Fort Frances, because my dad got a better teaching job there, a permanent job then. So we moved back to Fort Frances in 1950 to his hometown. And I spent the rest of my life till 1966 in Fort Frances. Now, this is where things get kind of weird, I think. When I was about 8 years old, we moved to the east end of town. And the reason why we moved there is my dad became a principal and got a brand new school. And we had an older home. It was no basement, just a wood foundation and a crawl space. And it was a typical two-story home with two bedrooms up in the kind of an attic bedroom situation. So we lived in that house for about 3 years. And when I was about 8, 9, somewhere in that range, I started having these strange dreams at night. I'd be lying in we had a bunk bed. My brother and I shared one room, a bedroom. I had the upper bunk bed, and he had the bottom one. And I'd had these strange dreams where my head would start to spin. It's like I'd been picked up in a tornado. And I could look down and see myself leaving the room, see my brother down there, and I'd be pulled up. And I can't explain. It's like I was swirling around in a tornado. And I'm spinning, and I'm screaming my head off. Yet I don't ever recall my parents or my brother ever waking up and were waking me up and saying they heard me scream. Then I'd be brought back down, or I'd wake up back in my bed, and I'd be like sweaty. I mean, literally just soaking wet. And this went on for about 3 years. Occasionally, like off and on. I don't remember every month or every week or what it was, but it probably at least 7 or 8, 9, 10 times I had this strange vortex. I call it a vortex dream, okay? And I thought maybe it's because my head's growing, or your brain gets twisted in your brain, it's not catching up, and it's causing all these kind of illusions or something. That was the first strange experience that I had. Then we moved to the other end of town, east end of town. I was about maybe 12, 13 years old, so I went to grade 8 there in that new school. My dad got a car at that time, and we started traveling back and forth to Rainy River to visit my mom's family. And I remember one night we were coming back to Fort Frances, and my mom was driving, or she offered to drive that time, because my dad was a bit tired. So it was a clear evening. The sun was just still in the air, still in the sky. It's a bright evening, and my mom said, "Do you want me to drive? I'll drive." Because you had a late that night last. You were up late last night. You're kind of tired. He said, "Sure." So he stopped the car, and for some reason, when he stopped that car, a vortex, something swung around the car. And there was no wind that night. It was a very calm night. And my mom opened the door. My dad opened his door, and the whole car just filled with debris. We were all screaming, "Shut the door! Shut the door!" And I had my homework in my lap. I was doing my papers and stuff. And they all blew around the car. It was just terrible. I mean, it's really frightening. My dad slammed the door shut, got back in the car, and mom said, "You're driving, I'm not driving for nothing." He started the car up again, we got back on the road, and we're not talking about driving from here to North Bayswater, maybe an hour, 15-minute trip. He got back in the car, and we drove back to our town house, Fort Frances. And we got to the house, remember my dad saying to my mom, "What time do we leave Rainy River?" And she said, "Well, right after supper." He said, "Well, that doesn't make sense. I remember them talking about this, because I wasn't really paying that great attention. Because he said, look at the time. He says, something's wrong here. He said, it couldn't take us that long to get home. He must have left later. And that's all I remember about that, okay? And then again, that stupid vortex, I don't know where the hell that came from again. And that's what I'm trying to lead up to, where all this happens now. But just to think about it, sir.
Also flight depth, where I finished your sentence, where we saw that same body of water with the coast.
Oh, yes. And I come later on then.
I thought you were there.
No. Okay, so I finished my education at Port Francis, grade 12 and 13, and I actually failed grade 13, and that was a bad point in my life. I got away from the Catholic Church. I started thinking more independently. I got confused all that. But anyways, at that point, my dad became a superintendent, so we moved to Sudbury here in 1966. And I came to Sudbury with him, with my brother too. All four of us came here to Sudbury. And I took a year off just to get my bearings. I didn't really want to go to university. I was very shy, very...
Messed up,
and I guess that's the way to put it. And I don't think I could handle university at that point in my life. So I took a year off, and then I decided to go to Cambridge College in the Sioux and become a drafting technician, okay? Rather than an architect, so I didn't have the capacity to be an architect. I knew that. So I went to the Sioux for 2 years. I got my technician paper drafting. I came back to Sudbury here. I got a job with an architectural firm here. And again, architecture is that type of business where you're up 1 year and down the next year financially, okay? He had 2-3 contracts, and we had recession in about that period of time, and I was about 19 or 20. And I thought, well, that's not going to work out. And he told me, I might have to lay you off in a year or so, so if you find something better. For some strange reason, within that week, I came home, I picked up Sudbury Star, which I never looked for the want ads. I saw an ad there for the city hall hiring the draftsmen, and for some strange reason, I applied, and I got the job. So that was in 1971. In 1971, I was...
That's the year we met?
Yeah, 1971, yes. In 1971, anyways. I then moved to the city hall, the old city hall downtown, and as a drafting technician there. And I used to go to the Chatterbox, which I don't know if you remember, that was on Arch Street.
It was a little...
Across from the new city hall.
Yeah,
it's a basement restaurant. So I'd go there every lunch hour, have my chili at the counter there. And I saw these two girls sitting down in the basement at a booth, okay? Yeah, she was one of them. And I've been very shy. I never would have walked over and introduced myself, okay? But for some reason, I don't know why, the first time I saw Helena sitting there, I just felt this, I don't know what it was, like you call it, soulmate or that kind of thing. But this went on for weeks and weeks, and it turned into months. But one day, on a Monday morning, I went into work, and this girl that was sitting at this booth with this girl was in my department, and she was hired to work as a what we call printing clerks, okay? They took all our drawings, they ran them through a machine and made prints for us, okay? I couldn't believe it. Here she was.
My sister.
They introduced me to her. This is Chris. You know, I said, you know, you're working. I said, well, holy shit. So she said, aren't you the guy that's always at the Chatterbox? I said, yes. So she says, well, that's my sister. Why don't you join us someday? So that week I went over and we sat down. That's how I met Helen. She introduced me to Helen, her sister. She's the younger one. And that's how Helen and I met. And that's through that situation there, which, again, I find very strange, like, because I was a confirmed bachelor. I never wanted to get married. Never.
Except
absolutely not.
Every relative came to our wedding because I didn't think we were getting married.
I always had three things in my life: beautiful buildings, airplanes, jets, whatever, and then women. That's the priority of my life, okay? That's always my case. So anyways, Helen and I started dating, and I bought my first car then, 1971, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And we dated for about a year and a half, and then we got married in 1972. And we had a double wedding with her sister.
Yeah, we walked down the aisle.
With Kirk Lake, two of us, four of us. Now, this is a strange thing. The year, 1972, the summer, we got married in August. Probably in June, we went up to visit your parents. Remember, we were staying in the house. Because we weren't married yet, I slept on the couch in the living room. And this is where it's really weird. In the middle of the night, I started screaming. Her dad got up and came into the kitchen, turned the light on, and woke me up. But before this event happened, I saw something come through a doorway in a wall in the living room. And it had the old style doorway that was open with just a curtain and a rod. And this character is an old man, white hair. I remember that, and I don't remember what he's wearing, but he looked ethereal, like he could almost, excuse me, kind of see through him.
Going.
But he walked through this door, he pulled open the curtain, he came out of this room, the bedroom's on the other side of the door, into the living room. He walked over, and I was sleeping on the couch, and he leaned over me, and I was just screaming, like I was terrified. and his hair was coming down. I could almost feel it touching my face. And that's when your dad came up, and he turned the light on. He said, "What's wrong, Bill? What's wrong, Bill? What's wrong, Bill?" And I just said, "I just had a bad dream. I had a bad dream." So the next morning, we're sitting around having breakfast, and I was telling Helen about the dream. And her sister had come in, because she was at her other, anyways, her sister came in too. And she looked at me, and she says, "He came through a door in that wall?" I says, "Yes." And she said to Helen, "How can he know about that door?" I said, "What door?"
My parents plastered it in when we were kids.
I never knew there was a door there. It's completely covered in. And her mother said, "How can he know about the door?" I said, "I'm telling you, he came right through that door, and it had a green curtain." She says, "It had a green curtain."
Flowers, you described it.
Yes, floral. Now, that's the first paranormal experience, okay, through her. I never had a ghost dream like that before, except through Helen, okay? Now, this ties in her story. She's going to tell you later on about the house, okay? I never knew anything about this house before.
No.
So later on, after we got married, about 73 or 74, we bought a camp with my parents out on Ham Lake near French River, okay?
69.
Okay. Well, somewhere in 69. Okay, yes. So about 1974, we had my brother and his wife come out to the camp, and when the forest was sitting around, and he was married, and they had two daughters, okay? So two daughters were sleeping in the bedroom. My brother and his wife and Helen and I were sitting in the living room. Now, yeah, the camp is situated on the lake frontage, but the parking lot, when we come in off the road, is up about 10 feet from the back of the camp, okay? The front would be facing the lake. And my parents sometimes would drive out on the weekend and surprise us. We didn't have enough bedrooms there, so we all shared the camp and had the weekend again. And they said they might come up that Friday night. So we're all sitting in the living room. This is about 9 o'clock at night. It's probably in August. It's kind of cool. You had that, like I call it, damp mist that comes down the settles and everything. It's not rearranged. It's like a dew. Okay,
dew on the deck.
And we're sitting in the living room like this. And we hear, there's about 10 stairs you have to come down.
Boom, 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 boom.
And the screen door open. And then the inside door open. And we're expecting them to come through the door, eh? And nobody came through the door. And the two girls got freaked out and the door's closed. So Gary and I got up. Got a flashlight. We opened the door. We went on the deck, and everything's covered with this dew. And there's not a footprint on the dew. We walked up the stairs. And we could see our footprints in the dew, but there's nothing coming down the stairs. There's no car there except our car.
And four adults heard it clearly. We were crouching.
And there's no
way. We were so afraid.
The door opened and the door closed. So that's my second experience with her concerning paranormal. Okay.
He's not doing ghost stories.
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying this all ties together.
Yes, okay.
Now we come ahead. In about 1975, we went to Florida with my parents, just the four of us, my two parents and Helen and I, and we got along very good. So we rented a car down there, and we drove up to Key West. Okay, now that's a long bunch of islands connected with
the
Causeway. Okay, and when I was driving the car down the Causeway, Helen sitting in the front seat with me. I said, "I don't know about you, but I'm getting a very, very bad sense of deja vu here." I said, "All my life I've had this dream where I'm in some kind of vehicle. So we're driving down a road, and the road." It's heading towards a body of water, and this vehicle, and I'm screaming, "Stop the car, because we're driving this road, and there's a road being covered with this water."
And I finished that sentence. I said, "It's a cove. You're going very fast. You get that feeling at the IMAX when you're in a helicopter and you're skimming through the movie."
Yeah.
That's how it was. And the road went underneath the water, and I finished his sentence. Yeah. I said, "I've been there, and I've had that recurring dream." So that's
and the water disappears, and you're skimming across this water.
Four or five times.
And I know we're going to go off the road, and we're going to drown. I'm screaming, "Stop the car." I said, "No." She said, "I had that dream too."
Many times.
Yes. Weird. I don't understand that.
Four or five times.
Yeah, I had that many, many times.
So
yeah.
We finished each other's stuff, and I said...
So that takes us up now later on to about 2002, okay? We're at my parents' place on 609 Greenbrier Drive.
It's a little early.
I know.
That's okay. The year's not important.
And we, just about 9 o'clock at night, my mom had broken her hip that year, and she was in bed. So my dad walked us to the door, we had visited him, he opened the door, we stepped outside, and he closed the door behind us. As we stepped outside to go to the car, Hal said, "Do you see something in the air? What's that light?" And we started looking. It was one of those nights where it's like, I think it's August or September.
There was a three-quarter moon, half moon.
Three-quarter moon, and a lot of black clouds in the sky. But
Fluffy, broken up like she saw.
So you get... The clouds moving, then you get the moon come out, then the clouds moving. And we looked up, and this is a black triangle. I mean, this was huge. It covered the whole subdivision. And then the clouds parted, and the moon came out, and you could really see it clear. And I could see one light in each corner of this triangle, and I swear to God, it's a perfect triangle. And it was moving very slow, absolutely no sound, very, very quiet. And the lights were not like on planes. So my brothers had a plane. We built a plane. We flew a lot. I know what aircraft plane lights look like. These were very slowly pulsed. They get brighter, and then they dim. Brighter, and they would dim. And I swear to God, one of the lights was orange. Now, we need to disagree about this.
I'm putting my tickets in a minute.
I'm looking for reference points. I'm trying to figure out how big. I'm thinking it's at 1,000 feet, which is the minimum flight that planes are supposed to fly at. Then this thing would have been pretty huge. If it's even higher, then this thing would have to be super huge to cover the volume of space that I'm seeing, okay? And I'm taking reference points off my mother's house, the tree, and the neighbor's
yard, the
apartment behind us. And it's moving across. I'll show you the plan afterwards. Kind of in the southeast, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And her sister lives out in Juan Bautista. We should have phoned her and asked her to go and check, but we never did. But we stood like two deer in a headlight, looking at this thing. Helen sees different things than I do, so I'm looking, I'm trying to track the speed of it, and I'm trying to figure out how high it is, where it's going, and I'm trying to look for some kind of propulsion system, like, does it have powers or an engine or flames coming out, and I see nothing, absolutely nothing. Just a black triangular object with these three lights. I think there's one in the center, but I don't remember that for sure, okay? She says not. But I do remember one in each corner. This flew in that direction, and we got back to the car, and we came home. Now, being a draftsman in my career, you document everything every day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What projects you're working on, every pile of information I have, I documented what's in there, what I have to go back to finish. I kept diaries at work and everything. And we cannot find the information on this.
We think he threw it out when he retired.
Yeah.
We can't find the date and the
detail.
Can I give you my description of it, or do you want to stop that and just have him...
Hang on, I want to finish this up,
okay?
Now, again, this is the next date is very disconcerting to us. We can't find that out. I think it happened the next year, which would be 2003. Well, I think so, because that's when my parents moved out of the house. But we're in this house upstairs in our bedroom. And I'm not a good sleeper to begin with, okay? So it's very seldom if I get maybe 5-6 hours of solid sleep in the night. But I think this happened around 3 o'clock in the morning. I was laying on my side of the bed, and I heard across the roof, like somebody walking across the roof or jumping across the roof. And then they dropped down and landed on the carport. Now, I'll take you upstairs and I'll show you. There's a round window that you can't see in our bedroom because we've got it covered. But I saw something come through that round window, like a mist, and it formed right in front of my, between me and the clothes closet and the bed. In this object, a tall, gangly creature, I figure about 7 feet tall. I can't make out the face, but it had an oblong face with big eyes on it. And I started screaming. I mean, literally screaming my head off. She never woke up. And I'm screaming. I was trying to move. I couldn't move. I was terrified. And I remember this thing leaned over. I don't mean leaned over. It kind of approached me and leant a bit. It said, "This is the last time we're going to visit you. Everything's going to be okay, but I have to do something to you." And it reached its hands down towards my chest. I don't remember anything after that. And we woke up about 7 o'clock the next morning, and Helen said to me, "Did I ever have a strange dream last night?" I says, "What was it about?" And she says, "I had a light appear through that door here, the one that my bedroom was closed." I said, "Hold it. I had the same thing here." And we started
Let
talking.
Let me tell my side.
I'll tell the side of the story, yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Going back to the triangle,
My
vision is much better than his. And when this craft went over, it was triangular, it was jet black. I could see a square outline, like maybe it was something square hanging down from it. I even saw a conduit, like a black. I said, "I wonder if that's, you know, something hanging off of it, if that's for the air or what it is." It had three lights, but the first light was white, and it came on, and then it went off. And then the next one on the other wing was orange, and it came off and it went out. And the front one was greenish blue, and then it went off and it went back off, on and off. And then they repeated like that. And we saw it for about 30 or 40 seconds. It was quiet as a feather, huge. And I said to Bill, "If that thing is 1,000 feet.
And moving slow.
And moving very slow." I said, "How can something that big stay up by itself like that to begin with? But if that thing's at a 1,000 feet, like you said, it's huge." And then I said, "If it's 10,000 feet, it's a friggin' mothership. It's got to be. It was wider than the apartment block across the road from wingtip to wingtip." And I said to him, "Why didn't you knock on the door and have your dad come out to witness it?" He said, "Why didn't I phone my co-workers on Estera and Highway 69? And he said, "Better still, my camera was right there on the back seat of the car. Why didn't we react?" And we didn't. We're mystified about that. That's one thing.
But we weren't afraid. We drove home.
We weren't afraid.
Just like you saw a deer on the side of the road and you didn't pay attention. You just were calm, we came home.
Yeah.
And we barely talked about it.
I can tie in the year better. because I have some history about this. Do you want this recorded?
Sure.
We can't use this, though.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that it was 1996, 1997, because when I had the experience, I phoned my girlfriend in the Sioux, and I told her about my experience. I said, you will never believe what we saw last night. She said, my son was at a park outside, like a lake park, in the Sioux that same night, and she said the boys came in at 9 o'clock. They were all excited. They saw something in the sky. It had lights on it. It was slow moving. And I said, I saw something in Sudbury that very same night. I phoned her two nights ago, and I said, you don't have to remember the details, but please tell me how old your son was. And she said he was about 18 or 19. So given his age now, this has to be 1996, 1997. But their son is not well, so we can't bring him into this conversation. But I have a, you know how on these shows they say you have to have a backup? Okay. Now, the night that we had this incident happen upstairs, and we'll go up and show you, I remember I sometimes sleep with my eyes slightly open, and I saw a blue flash in our front window, and I said, did I just see a blue light go past the house? Is there an emergency vehicle? You know when there's a snow plow, it wasn't snowing, but something awakes you. I closed my eyes again, and I thought, something's waking me again. I looked at her clock, and you'll see you can't miss it. It's huge. It was 2:30. And I closed my eyes again, trying to sleep, and something woke me again. I opened my eyes, and I saw a figure standing in our bedroom, and it was gangly, long, tall, skinny thing with a large head, and it had big eyes. I don't know if they were slanted, but it had big eyes. And I remember it had the long, long arms on it were very long. Yeah, it bothered me.
I do too.
Yeah. And I couldn't see the feet because my mattress cut off the bottom portion of it. And I'll show you where it was standing in the corner. And I looked at that and I closed my eyes and I said, this thing better be gone when I open my eyes again. And I opened them and it's still there. So I rolled over and I grabbed my husband by the arm like this and said, if I'm going anywhere tonight, buddy, you're coming with me. And I hung on to him. And then it's dark. How do you fall asleep after you've had that kind of experience? As I'm drifting and it's getting dark, and I'm falling into sleep, I hear a voice saying to me, we're done with you, we're not coming back. And I woke up the next morning, and it's morning. And I said to Bill, he said, you've got to hear this dream that I had. I said, please let me go first because I've got it fresh and I have to remember this. And I told him when I, and he told me his story, and I said, how could two people have the same dream on the same night? Clearly.
You see, this is what bothers me, because...
Was it a dream?
Yeah, I've had dreams all my life, but you associate the night terror, and it's an individual thing. But when two people have the same dream, that's what really made me think, how the hell could you both have the same identical dream?
Same night.
First time you ever had, and probably the only last time we ever had an identical dream like that, you know?
The only thing I remember about your conversation the next morning is... I was focused in and trying to remember and keep things clear in my mind, but what stood out the most about what you said is you said, you know what bothered me the most was the way that it moved.
Yeah.
It was so fast moving, you said it was sickening. It was a sickening feeling that because it darted so fast.
Yeah.
And that's all I remember about to add on to what he said with his dream.
And I said, when I had those vortex dreams when I was young, I always thought, like I said, my brain was swelling or the skull was growing or something, you know. I passed it off like that, but after this experience and what he said to me, this is the last time we're going to visit
you. And
I
had that too.
Yeah.
We won't be back.
Me, you know?
We're done with you.
Yeah. That's the part that struck me the most. Yeah. It really bothered me. Now.
So, was it a dream? We started questioning that.
No, I come to coincidences, okay, in our life. She lived at 27 Dixon Avenue in Kirkland Lake. And she had seven people in her family. Two parents and
five.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you call yourself five.
Siblings,
okay?
Yeah.
Our address is 27 Lonsdale Avenue. Okay? That's Chris's.
Yeah.
Now, her brother married a woman who has a sister living in Sudbury here. Her sister, that we're very good friends with now, and actually the two sisters that do not talk to each other now, but we met through the fact that she married her brother. Her address is 949. Ours is 727. Two people plus our address makes 949.
He does this kind of stuff, I don't, but anyway.
Now, just a question. I wonder what the stuff like, okay? Strange, okay? Now, going back to Dunville, my parents had rented an old they called it a manor at that time. It was owned by a very rich doctor one time who passed on. And the place had kind of gone
derelict.
An estate,
eh?
Yeah, an estate. That's what it really was. And they were given the bottom floor to rent. And it had a big veranda. My mother said that place was full of snakes on there. When I came back home, yeah, I know, but that's why I feel about snakes today, too, though. But she had to sit outside and notice the snakes would be coming down the columns and everything else. Okay. Now, when we moved back to Fort Frances, teachers didn't get paid then, okay, in the summertime. And my dad's a teacher, so he had to work in the summertime. He got a job as a forest ranger, and he'd go to a provincial park. There's one on Lake of the Woods, and he ran the junior ranger program. And they came out the park and set up tents and stuff and help out people and that kind of thing, okay? So one summer we went up there for them. We rented a trailer, we put it on the site. And they had a long provincial beach there, a park beach. It went out maybe 200 feet. You could walk out and it'd only be, as a kid, only up to your chest, okay? Beautiful beach. But the trouble is the waves, a big lake, the waves rolling in would be huge sometimes, okay? So we take our little rubber raft out there and roll in on these, like, kind of like surfing in a sense, okay? But we all, there could be about 30 people on that beach. This was a sunny afternoon, beautiful afternoon. And I remember some guy on that beach yelling, "What is that?" And everybody's looking at the horizon, okay? And we saw a boat go by. Now, back then, fishing boats on that lake, you had to have at least a 30-foot boat. Because if you went on that lake, something like Lake Juan Fatigue here, you're risking your life if you didn't have a fairly big boat. Okay? And they had a lot of fishing out there, especially with the Indian reservation there. The Indians did a lot of fishing. And they always talked about, we have friends who lived in the reserve with them, okay? The Indians had this legend or story that went way, way back about this huge reptile that lived on this lake, something like Acapulco or that place it's called. Mm-hmm.
Loch Ness.
Yeah, and this guy we know said he had a friend that actually met this thing out in the lake one night, coming back from a fishing trip. And everybody thought he was drunk and was telling all these big stories. He says his big head came out of the water near the house and chased him around the boat and the whole bit, and he was petrified, okay? He talked about this all his life, okay? But anyways, we're all sitting on this beach playing and doing our stuff. This guy says, "What's that out on the lake?" And we saw this boat go by about 15 minutes prior to that, and you could tell that the boat looks about that big and you see the wake behind it. But this thing was different. There's a big head, bald head coming up, and you can see the waves kind of splashing like this, and then there's two humps behind it. And it went up on this rock. Now, we know that rock is probably about 150 feet long, okay, from the maps, because these guys are telling us about staying long. I grabbed my binoculars, and I looked at it, and I got, at that time, very powerful binoculars, and I can make out details better. And the sun was shining on it, you can see the water glistening on the skin, okay, so it's kind of a reptilian object, okay, but again, it's so far away. I mean, this is a big lake, okay? But everybody's looking, everybody says, "What is that thing?" You see the three humps, and it's moving damn fast across the lake, faster than this boat was going, okay? That's the second incident I have with the so-called reptiles, okay? Now, we go to Ham Lake.
That's just a big snake, though.
Acapulco or something. This thing is huge.
No, this thing is an old snake. He outlived the rest of them down there.
Well, I don't know. But it was on Ham Lake. We bought the camp. My dad was the type of guy who would go out and talk to everybody on the lake. And he met this neighbor. And the neighbor said, "If you're fishing over in that cove there, you should be very careful, because there's a huge snake in that cove."
And I run out of his time. You don't have to take this.
And the last summer we had the camp there, before we sold the camp with my parents, Hal and I went on our canoe. And be damned if we didn't see the snake come out of this cove. It has had to be longer than our canoe. We figured about 16 feet long. My canoe was 14 feet
big
long.
Head.
And it turned and looked at Helen. She panicked. She almost capsized the canoe. We started backing up. This thing was probably about from here to that wall over there from us. And we can make it up pretty damn clear, I'm telling you. It went up on this one rock, and then the back end came up on the other rock.
And then the tail came up. It was in three long rings. But they say there's an old snake that lives there. I don't know.
And that disappears. That's my third instance with these snakes. And again, everybody laughed at this guy in the lake. They all thought he was nutty, drinking and all that kind of shit. But he actually did. He said, "All my life I've seen this thing once or twice."
He said
he's stopping now.
He says he has a huge hand, and this snake's head was bigger than his fist.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to talk a bit about my parents too, because when my dad was born, he was born in, I don't know what you call that, the sack or something?
The veil.
The veil?
The birthing veil?
Birthing veil, what it's called?
It's a birthing sack, and it doesn't come off you when you're born?
It's very,
very, very few people have it. It's rare.
Anyways, he was born slightly premature, and back then they didn't have good doctors and anything else. This would be back in 1925 he was born. And they had these women that came and helped the mother gave birth. What do you call this?
The midwife,
okay.
And he had two sisters.
That's right. And the midwife said, "I don't know, this baby's going to die unless we do something dramatically." She said, "Open up your wood stove, get a small fire going, like on the bins on the inside. Put him on the door in a basket, and we'll keep him warm over the night and see if he survives, okay?" One of the amendments that I just put him in the window and let him die from pneumonia. That's this cool night, you know,
he'll go fast.
The best thing to do. Anyways, my dad survived, okay? But his mother died shortly after his birth, about a year and a half later on. She wasn't a well woman to begin with. That's the last child she had. But my dad said when he was about 6 or 7 years old, they had a barn out in the back. And they used to always play in the barn, him and his brothers and everything else, okay? He said one night, his mother came to him a dream and said, John, do not play in the barn anymore. Stay away from that barn for the next week. He said 3 days later, that barn burned to the ground. He would have been up in the loft. Like, he always went up there and read his books and sat in the loft. Eh? He said, if I were just start just like that and the place just burnt, because all the hay and everything else in there? He said, that was a strange thing. That the first time my dad had experienced something like that, okay? Now, later on in life, when we were in Sudbury here, he went to Toronto on a convention. As a superintendent, he'd go to Toronto twice a year on conventions. He was there with another guy who bought a suit from his tailor in an old Jewish family. The Jewish woman walked over to Dad, not the guy who was buying the suit, took his hand and said, may I read your palm? And Dad said, that's strange. So he said, sure, go ahead. And he said, it really shook my dad up, he said, because this woman said so many things about his life, eh? And Dad would never tell us what all the things were.
But she said you'll have two boys, yeah. One's initials, yeah. W, and she named
everything. She named everything about him. She knew all about the boys and his past and what he'd done and the future. And Dad would never tell us what he said.
Can I add in something here that's really important to me? My nephew Stephen was also born
that's what I was coming to.
With the birthing veil.
That's right.
And they say that's very rare in life that you have that. And superstition or folklore says if you're born that way, you're going to be very extremely lucky in life.
So now, him and my dad were very close together because they both born the same way. He took after my dad tremendously. He's got the same intellect. He's a very outgoing personality.
Cloned.
It's weird. More so than my brother. Mm-hmm. When my dad died, I had to come to that part now, okay? My mom and dad had been close all their lives, okay? And they moved to the south wing after mom broke her hip. She got cancer, and she had about 6 months to live, okay?
Three months to live.
She died in August, was it?
She died October 8th,
okay.
And he died September 5th, not even a month apart. We called them Mr. and Mrs. Love because they just, they went together.
But actually, my dad died first.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Now, the strange thing is, we were all together going back. My dad was at the old General Hospital, my mom was at the Laurentian Hospital, okay?
Together.
And we'd go back and forth, the four of us, my town and I, and my brother and his wife, okay? Through the park, back and forth, walk back and forth through the hospitals. The night my dad died at the General Hospital, we had visited him, and Stephen had just come up, that was the grandson. He came up and saw his grandpa, talked to him.
Say goodbye.
Yeah, but he was in a coma, so he just talked to a person that's in a coma, okay? As we all left the hospital, we're walking through the park. A light, one of the big pole lamps in the park, there, went out. I said, I bet you my dad just died.
Yeah. He's walking with us. Yeah.
Kind of joke like that. And there's the idea of full of shit. He said, no. I said, I bet you just died. So we went out to the Laurentian. We said goodbye to my mom. And we said, Pat, tucked in for the night. We came home. Just as we got home, Gary got
home
first.
Ringing.
He phoned me and said, Dad died just an hour ago. He said, we have to go back to the hospital. So we jumped back in our car. We drove back to the General. We walked in. Of course, they had him laid out. So we said, our goodbyes to him and that. We walked back over to the hospital, woke my mom up and told her that Dad had just died. No. What happened after that? That week after, the Friday after, my dad died on Friday night?
About 7 days later.
That's when you had the experience.
I know that we put the wrong date on that man's death because I said, I think the nurses didn't find him until after the midnight hour. He actually passed on the 4th and I think he was trying to tell me because I came sleepwalking down here 1 week later and I woke up and I was standing right there facing the clock and it was 11:45 and I said, damn it, he's trying to tell me that he died on the 4th and we put the 5th on his death certificate. And I said, I'm sure, Bill, this has to be from your dad trying to relate that to me. 7 days after that, I woke up in the middle of the night, pitch dark, and I see him standing beside me with his hands like this, bending over my bed, smiling, and he was just young, blonde, curly hair, and he was just glowing. We went back to the hospital to tell his mother
of
the
event. So that same night, too, we woke up in the morning, all the power in the two bathrooms was off.
Okay, yeah, we've never had electrical problems in this house ever, but the lights flickered, and we had trouble there. But when we went back to the hospital to tell your mother to visit her, I described her husband I said he was about 19 or 20. He had a beautiful white shirt on, and it even had like pinstripes where you could see through it in spots. And okay, he had his hand like this, so I don't know if he had his wedding ring on. I couldn't see it. He was glowing, like he was emitting light and bending over me, because I asked him to come after he passed and give me a sign if there's an afterlife. That was just between him and I was his barber, and I said, if you can give me a sign when you're gone, please do it, because I'm up for it. Okay, so when we went back to the hospital to tell his mother at the visitation that we had with Grandpa, she said, you described him exactly what he was like when he was 19 and I met him. He had curly, tight curls, blonde hair, and it sat up on his head. You described, how could you know that? I said, I can't, but I know he came to me.
And then every Friday after that, that bathroom upstairs, two bathrooms, the power went off.
Lights.
I had no idea that Patricia wired everything up there. It was on a GFCI that's on the panel downstairs here. I figured out after about the second night.
This happened three times at least.
Came down here, and I turned that switch on, reset it, the power would go back on the two bedrooms. Every Friday night, the power would go off until my mom died. Then after that, we never had that problem again.
We've had no trouble since. I don't know if he was waiting for her, if there's such a thing as he's going to help her across. I don't know. We've had mystical things, so it's not just about sightings. Like, I know my mother came to me when she passed, and I know his father came to me because I asked him to. I said, if there's an afterlife, and if you can, please give me some sort of a sign. Well, he came right to my bedside, and I would swear that on the Bible.
Okay, you turn off now.
Now, there.
Yeah,
he's just telling you the interesting stuff that's happened to us. So
yeah.
I just saw a bug fly by, so that's probably from my greenhouse. Anyway, go ahead.
So where else this takes us, I don't know. I mean, I've been puzzled all my life about this stuff.
We have so many questions.
Yeah.
I also...
Like, I always wondered why... I said my parents never heard me screaming in that bedroom. Yet I know it's like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
I remember being lifted up out of that bunk bed, mm-hmm. through the ceiling, and looking down at the house.
Yeah.
Everything. I remember that so clear. And I remember it just spinning, and I'm screaming my head off. And I don't remember... I can't say I was abducted. I don't know. I don't remember anything about that.
I don't,
honestly.
I said, if I ever get the chance to, I'd like to be regressed and put under and see if there is something there from our childhood on. If I ever get the chance to, I'd love to do it, but we haven't. We haven't.
And again, the fact the way we met, I never would have... If she wanted to have children, it better than
no. I didn't want kids either.
Yeah, we didn't want kids, that's guaranteed.
And then we said so later, like, maybe we've been put together for convenience so somebody can visit both of us.
Yeah.
It's a joke, but is it really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you too. Yeah. You have that connection too. You understand it's not...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not mental. But anyway, that's...
And I've always seen things in my life too, like doing things in the air, moving around erratically, you know, but I never pay much attention, so I always thought that's something we can't touch or feel or see, you know? But these last experiences I've had...
That was real.
And that experience in the car, I don't understand that either. The wind was so strong. I mean, it just blew everything around the car. The dirt came in the car.
It reminded me of Dorothy in the Wonderland story, the way you described him.
It was a perfectly calm evening, and I remember my dad saying, that's impossible. We couldn't have left right after supper.
You might have missed
I wish time. I know what time he said, because I don't know. I know that we didn't have watches back then.
Your whole family probably had missing time. And now Stephen is terrified at night, and I'm afraid to tell him that maybe he's the next victim, and it's going through our lineage that he's being followed.
Know.
Maybe you have too.
He's like me. He can't sleep at night. I've never been over Stephen.
And he's afraid of something. He's terrified.
I just do all my homework at night. I stay up downstairs in the room and just do my studying, doing my paperwork, his homework. I can never sleep at night.
I asked him what
until the sun comes up, then I get my best sleep. And Stephen's the same way.
I asked Stephen, I said, when did this happen? He said, when I was a kid. And he said, it was worse at Grandpa's. He said, I swear to God, the house was haunted.
Yeah.
And I said, when I went back to visit my mom and I ended up on the floor sleeping beside her, I felt the house was haunted too there. But we always have something unexplained and visiting us. And is it a ghost? Is it something else? We don't. But it's gone on for, it's just gone on forever. I have to look at my notes if I go any further.
That's about it, as far as I can tell. I don't think there's anything else here.
Okay, I have a little story to tell you. About a year and a half ago, I went and dropped into a convenience store on the corner of Berry Down and LaSalle, and I dropped in to get some sundries. This man that worked there asked me if I had just come from the Garson area, and I said no. And he said, oh, darn, he said, there's three of my customers today came in and told me that they have seen something around the radar road area, and it was in the sky. They pulled over to the side of the road. It was 7:30 in the morning. They were heading to work, and one guy even stopped and took pictures of it, and we thought, he was hoping that I had heard something more about this, and I said, no, I hadn't, but I hope you go and investigate it. I wish I had names and more details. I don't, but it's that's all I can tell you about it. I have a friend that lives in Sault Ste. Marie. Her name is Margie Caruso. Her brother drives for the Agawa Canyon train run that goes up north of the Sioux.
Yeah.
It's a day
excursion.
He said on two or three occasions their train was followed quite closely and for a few miles, but they have seen UFOs following them,
yeah.
Correct?
And his name is David.
And his name is David. David Cialetti in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. One of the guys I used to work with, Mark Paketsi, bought a house out in Astaire. And when his girls, that'd be about 1980 to 1985, when his girls were around the age of 10 to 12, he had two daughters. They'd have to walk out about 100 feet from the house to the main road to catch the school bus every morning. And this was in the wintertime. They walked out to the street and they came running back to the house screaming, crying with one of their friends who had met them at the intersection. And all three girls said they saw a glowing fireball over the top of the hydro pole. And it looked like it was drawing up blue energy off the hydro lines. And that's the way they described it. But they were afraid because the whole thing looked like it was on fire. So they ran back to the house screaming. By the time Mark got out to the road to look out, the thing was gone. And that's basically the story, which is I know.
That's it.